Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Start your engines. NASCAR, the National Association for Stock Car Auto Racing, did that just five decades ago, and it hasn't looked back. In 2001, grief at the death of iconic NASCAR driver Dale Earnhardt Sr. brought the sport's enormous fan base into wide view. The 2004 presidential race sanctified stock car racing's place in American culture and political throw weight with the phrase NASCAR Dads. What to some is cars driving in circles is to NASCAR fans the very soul of American excitement. Raw, rumbling, righteous. There is tragedy or its hot breath at the track every Sunday.
Trouble now! Truex spins to the inside lane! Two cars out of it and slamming the inside wall!
Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s in the concrete, Kevin Harvick, Jimmy Johnson, Martin Truex Jr. all crashing out of control.
And there is NASCAR triumph.
Six times he's played the bridesmaid's role in Nextel Cup Racing. Tonight he wants to throw the bouquet. Final time into turn three, wide open and on his way is Casey Kane.
Casey Kane did win that race at the Richmond International Raceway this month, and the drama keeps coming. NASCAR runs more than 2,000 races a year, each with its own punch of adrenaline, its own NASCAR magic. Maybe you know that magic, maybe you don't. Tonight we'll go inside the NASCAR sensation with author Jeff McGregor. His new book, Sunday Money, chronicles a year on the NASCAR circuit. This hour on Point, the United States of NASCAR. You can join the conversation. Did you grow up with NASCAR? Do you hear angels when stock cars roar? Or are you on the outside looking in, not even looking? And how do you explain the wild popularity of NASCAR? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Charlotte, North Carolina, is Jeff McGregor. He's author of the acclaimed new book, Sunday Money, Speed, Lust, Madness, Death, A Hot Lap Around America with NASCAR. He crisscrossed the country with his photographer wife in an RV 10 times in 10 months on the trail of the NASCAR circuit. He's a special contributor to Sports Illustrated and six-time National Magazine Award nominee. Jeff McGregor, thanks for being with us tonight.
Tom, thank you so much. What an intro.
well, we've got to have some fun. That was the most elaborate radio intro I've
ever heard. There are engines, there's music.
All for you, Jeff McGregor, all for you.
The race announcers. And isn't it, I mean, and the thing you have to understand about these guys is that every moment at every race sounds exactly like the Hindenburg landing at Lakehurst. Oh, the humanity.
Right, the humanity. Well, you know, we're on National Public Radio. We figured we had to lay out what was going on there. People wouldn't necessarily know, though I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who do. Jeff McGregor, we're happy to lay out a big rumbling welcome for you here. But let me ask you, here you are, big magazine writer. You could write about almost anything you wanted in the world, and you invested a year in NASCAR. Now, we know it's big, but you had the world to write about. Why this?
Well, I take exception to the idea that I'm a big magazine writer. I just, you know, I'm a guy who is lucky enough to be able to write for a living. Here's how it happened, and it's one of those stories that just doesn't really pay off at the end, but I'll plow ahead.
Okay.
We were having some meetings in the summer of 2001 at Sports Illustrated, and we sort of all decided, me and a couple of editors, that we hadn't covered the sport adequately up to that point, and we hadn't done it justice. Not so much the sport itself, but the phenomenon of the sport.
Yeah.
And so it was proposed, let's do a piece about the racing, and then someone else piped up with another idea. Oh, let's do a piece about the culture surrounding the racing. And more ideas got thrown out, and the next thing I know, my wife and I are living in a car in the Walmart parking lot.
And doing it for the better part of a year. Now, there's a lot we're going to have explained here tonight. But for starters, why does it take crisscrossing the country top to bottom, you know, side to side for a year to get on top of this?
Well, because the sanctioning body, NASCAR, runs 36 races a year in their premier circuit, the now called the Nextel Cup circuit.
Mm-hmm. Formerly Winston Cup.
Formerly Winston Cup, which is why I'm still a little bit hoarse. There's a lot of smoke in those press boxes.
Right.
And those races are held at racetracks all around the country. It's not like your local professional sports franchise, where eight times a year the Jets are going to play within, you know, proximity of Manhattan. It's not like the Los Angeles Angels playing at an Anaheim stadium. These races are all over the country. And the tour circuits the country like a big traveling tent and revival show. It's the same drivers and the same crew members and the same publicists and the same writers and reporters. And so we figured the only way to sort of get from race to race to race to race over the course of a 10-month season was to be in a motorhome trailing along behind the rest of the caravan.
And you did it, and there's a lot we want to dig into with you tonight about the envelope around NASCAR, and it's a very big envelope, much of the country at this point. But share some of the basics with us, Jeff, because I know I'll have listeners who just won't understand what the progression is here. We know how to sit down and watch a baseball game or to watch basketball. Some of us will know how to watch a NASCAR season, and others won't. How does it unfold? Who wins? How? Where? What?
Well, okay, every weekend during a NASCAR season, virtually every weekend, you're going to have a race. Let's pick the race this weekend coming up at Charlotte, where I happen to be, the Coca-Cola 600. What that means is that there are going to be 43 cars on the track at Lowe's Motor Speedway here in Charlotte, and they will orbit the track for 600 miles, and whoever is leading at the end of the 600 miles will have won the race. For winning the race, they will be assigned some number of points, and over the course of an entire season, the racers and their teams accrue points. At the end of the season, your champion is determined by the number of points gathered up over the course of that 10 months.
Now, they're winning dollars at each stop along at the stations
exactly
of the crosshair,
right,
as well, though. $6 million purse at the Coca-Cola 600.
Great groaning haystacks of prize money.
Right.
To say nothing of the approbation of their friends and peers. So, yeah, you've got the individual race happens, and what's at stake there is the prize money and the points. And then at the end of the season, if you've outpointed all the other guys on the track, you will be handed a giant novelty check in an amount upwards of $5 million.
Okay. So there's the very basics. So we'll see those going race after race, and the drivers, of course, enormous heroes in their world, and it is a very big world. Let's go straight to the other question that novices ask, you know, every time you bring it up, and you raise it right at the front of the book. What are fans watching in those 6 hours, those 4 hours of round and round and round racing? Take us into the kind of the eyeballs of a devoted viewer, a devoted fan. What are they looking for?
Well, it's excuse me. It's difficult to explain this as it is to explain baseball to someone from Mars. I mean, you Americans sort of understand baseball at a molecular level in the way that Canadians understand hockey.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get it, you don't get it. But I'll do my best to sort of describe what happens. What are people rooting for? One fan may root for a driver, an individual, a personality, someone like a Dale Earnhardt Jr. or a Jeff Gordon or a Casey Kane.
Right.
The person sitting next to them may be rooting for the Chevrolets. They don't like Fords. They don't like Dodges. They want a Chevy to win that race. The person sitting next to him may well be rooting for a team owner, someone like Richard Childress or Jack Roush or Roger Penske, who's done well historically and is expected to do well again. So the rooting interests vary across the population. What they're watching on the track, though, are the little battles between these drivers who are moving 200 miles an hour at some tracks, inches apart, at great risk of life and limb. And there's terrific excitement in that. There are other folks who are sitting next to the excited folks who are very interested in the refinement, the infinite refinement of this obsolete technology. These are not Formula One cars. These are, you know, this isn't the cutting edge of carbon fiber composite technology. These are cars that could have rolled off the showroom floor in 1955. Big cast iron V8.
Essentially, because they're stock cars.
Essentially, exactly right. So there are so many different levels of entry and interest here that I'm loath to try to generalize. But tactically, what you're watching the racers do over the course of a 600-mile race is not just drive with their foot to the floor, but manage themselves around the track so that they move up through the field, so that they don't get hurt or hurt anyone else. And then you've got all of the tactic and strategy of deciding when you're going to come in and get gas. The pit stop is hugely important in NASCAR. And there are a lot of fans who root for the pit crews as well.
So give us a feeling. Here comes the Coca-Cola 600 coming up this weekend. What's got everybody in a swirl? What's the big question, the big issue?
Well, I think the big issue in Charlotte right now is when I go to read my book tomorrow night at the local bookstore, who gets to throw the banana cream pie?
Oh, why? They don't. I mean, you've
I'm not so sure that I'm going to be taken to the bosom of the hardcore fans down here.
But you're singing a kind of hymn to NASCAR here. I mean, you've got your skepticism, but you're in the pond. You're in the pool with everybody.
I'm in the deep end with them, Tom. And yet, historically, NASCAR books have been reverential, to say nothing of deferential, to the organization behind the sport and the sport itself. And I take what is being characterized as sort of an irreverent look at that.
Well,
I think the big issue this week is the same as the issue every week, which is who's got the horses this week to win.
Who's got the horses? And Jeff McGregor, stand by. We've got to take a short break here. Jeff McGregor's new book is Sunday Money, Speed, Lust, Madness, Death, A Hot Lap Around America with NASCAR. You can join the conversation tonight. How do you explain the wild popularity of NASCAR? What's the magic, the secret sauce that packs those stands? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Here comes Jeff Gordon looking for the checkered flag.
Jeff Gordon leads the way off turn four, looking for his sixth Daytona win. Kurt Busch looks one time to the inside, can't make the move. Jeff Gordon is a 2005 Daytona 500 champion.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the United States of NASCAR, the supercharged corporate and cultural phenomenon of stock car racing in the USA. My guest tonight, Jeff McGregor, author of the new book, Sunday Money. You can join the conversation tonight. NASCAR fans, what's the best darn race you've ever seen? What flips your trigger at the track? And NASCAR never bends. Are you mystified? What's your take on the fever at the track? What does NASCAR stand for in American culture today? Sex, death, race, a worldview? What is it? 1-800-423-8255 is our number. 1-800-423-TALK. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be hearing from NASCAR driver John Andretti, very accomplished in driver indeed. But Jeff McGregor, I wish you'd take us beyond the track now, back into those stands, and to begin to zero in on what's behind it, as you say, the way there's a universe behind baseball, there's a lot sitting behind NASCAR. There's a little bit I wish you'd read, maybe give us an explanation and then read from your book, where you talk about the meaning of the word racer. And it doesn't just mean driver. It's got a deeper NASCAR meaning. Take us in, get us oriented here and give us a little bit of the flavor of your book.
Okay, I'll read right now if you'd like me to. This is fairly early on in a section of the book called the Daytona Sketchbook, wherein I'm sort of trying to understand what it is that people see in the drivers. What do the fans see in the drivers? Standing behind the haulers, I heard a lovely little phrase as it skittered along on the wind. Sunday money. Out here it means race winnings, prize money. In my mind, those words seem to glow like gold. Been hearing the word racer all week, too. Thought at first, as you might, that it simply meant driver. Turns out to be a small word with an astonishing weight. Racer means more than driver. Racer means the old school truth. Racer means run what you brung. Racer means engine hoist on the low branch of a live oak. Racer means supper 3 hours cold on the table. Racer means not sufficient funds to pay. Racer means never stroking it. Racer means lead with your chin. Racer means you don't go to funerals, especially your own. Racer means midnight radio out of Memphis and you and Jerry Lee on the long haul home. It has nothing to do with money or fame, nothing to do with talent, nor with personality or popularity or modesty, not even success or courage. When I hear it being used, it seems to have everything to do with whatever constitutes the character at the deepest core of a person in this life, the life at the track. Grit, maybe, clarity of purpose, single-mindedness, willingness to sacrifice, simplicity of motive, stubbornness, strength, guile, sense. Maybe some of those, maybe none. In any case, to be called a racer here, a real racer, is perhaps the highest compliment possible. A racer can be a driver or an owner, a crew member, a wife, a mother, a daughter, a son, a fan, a journalist, an entire family. Anyone in whom racing resides not as a thing done, but as a way of breathing.
Jeff McGregor reading from his new book, Smart Money, written after the better part of a year. Sunday Money.
is where I'm going to wind up next after SI gets rid of me.
Yeah, maybe. Smart Money's betting on the winning car Sunday in the Coca-Cola 600. Jeff, I want to bring another voice here for a moment, if we may. Great. We've got with us right now from Mooresville, North Carolina, John Andretti. He's one of just a handful of drivers with major victories in the top motorsports, NASCAR, IndyCar, and Major League Sports Car Racing. In 1994, think about this, he became the first driver to compete in both the Coca-Cola 600 and the Indianapolis 500. On the same day, he's the nephew of racing legend Mario Andretti. John Andretti, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Good evening, Tom.
So what the heck was on your mind when you drove both those races in a single day?
Well, they existed, and you could do it. And so the easy part was the day of the race, or the day of the races. The hard part was getting to that day with traveling and racing on the West Coast and trying to get back to qualify for the Indy 500 and trying to get back to do a stock car race at Sonoma and then coming back and practicing at Indy and then going to Charlotte and qualify. And it was a logistical nightmare, especially that year, because the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 were very close together that year. And then they started splitting farther apart. The Indy 500 start time was the same, but the Coca-Cola 600 started getting later, but contractually, I wasn't allowed to do it, so again, and it's been unfortunate because I got jealous watching people do it after me.
It's almost unbelievable to imagine it. John Andretti, let me ask you, because you're a driver, you're out there, you do it. It's a fantasy, a dream for many NASCAR fans, and for others, it's just hard to really picture. Let me ask you first, your hometown is Indianapolis. That's where the Indy 500 is, the open-wheeled cars, the kind of supercharged, the souped-up cars. And you've driven that, and you've driven NASCAR, the stock cars. What's the difference from a driver's point of view in doing one rather than the other?
It's a school bus and a motorcycle difference. It's when you drive an Indy car, it's pretty much things happen really quickly, and the way the car handles, the way it feels, is completely different to a stock car. Stock cars is the much more of a slide and drive, and if you scrape something, it's not a big deal. Where an Indy car, it's they're somewhat fragile, and bumping into somebody can not only crash them, but it crash yourself. So there's two different kinds of driving styles to both. But I was even asked, a matter of fact, today about the driving. Could one driver do another? And you take somebody like Jeff Gordon, and you take him out of a stock car and put him in an Indy car, and he'd win Indy car races. A talented driver. Mm. They're just race cars, they're just machines, but they do feel totally different.
And put us in that stock car, in a NASCAR race. Here you are, you're going 150, 200 miles an hour. And for people who don't know what's going on when you're in that race, what are the issues you're dealing with? How do you win? I know crossing the line first would be most important, but how do you do that? What's it take? What kind of strategy? What kind of techniques?
It takes a lot, especially with a stock car race. Is more of an endurance race, or as much of an endurance race as it is anything. You certainly have to keep adjusting on your race car as the racetrack changes and as time passes. But it's a long way from start to end, so you have to stay in contention. But you don't necessarily have to be leading. So you'll see people, as they're up front, I'm used to open wheel racing, sprint races, mm-hmm. not necessarily just sprint cars, but you every lap you qualify on in a stock car, you're running 98% instead of 100%. You're close to the ragged edge, and sometimes you touch it and go over it, but you got to keep the car in one piece because you got to be there for the dash at the end, and that's the hard part, and you have to adjust for it too.
And the physical stuff, is that just part of the race? Do you assume going in you're going to be bumping and bashing and scraping?
Well, you try not to, because you want to preserve your car. You want to keep the fenders on it, as they say, and so you don't, because aerodynamically the cars have become so much more sophisticated. Even when I just started, less than a decade ago, they've come a long way. So you try to keep your car in one piece, but physically inside, they're demanding. They're extremely demanding because of temperature, and mostly because of the temperatures and the fumes and other things. So you get some carbon monoxide poisoning. You get also you get severely dehydrated in some cases, but you're always dehydrated. You can never take on enough fluid for as much as you expend during a race.
Just so can't do it for all that time. Jeff McGregor, here's the voice of John Andretti. He's done incredible things on the track, and of course his uncle Mario Andretti, an all-time legend in racing. Is this the voice of the contemporary NASCAR driver? I mean, this is, sounds like a gentleman farmer here.
Well, I think John, and I wanted to say hi to John. We met very briefly in 2002. John has, I think, a great presentation of how matter-of-fact these guys are about what they do. What John sort of isn't letting on about is how very – he's describing it, but it's incredibly hard. I mean, driving a race car is like sitting in a sauna for 4 hours, holding a bowling ball out at arm's length in each hand. It's extraordinary what these guys do. And I didn't realize that until I drove one of the cars myself. Richard Petty, the great king of stock car racing all time, runs a thing called the Richard Petty Driving Experience. And I signed up for one of his 8-lap experiences along with the, orthodontists and tax attorneys.
Yep.
And you drive one of these things and you realize that this is a vicious thug of a car that wants to kill me. And so, to Mr. Andretti, kudos for even getting in that thing week in, week out.
Well,
it's remarkable.
Do something for a living.
And again, this is what I say to my wife week in, week out with the Sports Illustrated thing. Honey, we've got to eat. But it's absolutely because it requires him to perform all these complicated things in that absolutely infernal environment at great risk to life and limb. And yet every time I talk to these guys, and I talk to every racer on the circuit at least twice that year, no one ever spoke of fear. No one ever spoke of the risk of physical injury. They would talk about, and John, I think you'd agree with this, if you say to somebody, boy, it's pretty risky to race at Talladega with the cars and those big tight packs like that, they won't say, yes, I'm afraid of doing it. What they'll say is, well, we're hoping that maybe with that extra quarter inch we have up on the air dam, we put another eighth on the spoiler, that'll keep us stuck to the track. We'll be fine.
John Andretti, how about it? Is it taboo in NASCAR racing to talk about fear, talk about danger, talk about death? People die there, of course.
Well, I think that in any kind of, people don't walk out the door and think that something's going to happen on the way to work. And I think that to us, we get in it and we're concentrating on winning. I think the only thing that we fear when we get in the car is losing or disgrace or not running well or anything. It has to do with the competitive side. Anytime you think about when you get to the car, you're only thinking about what you're going to do, what your strategy is, and winning the race. It's all about attitude, and I think when you walk out on pit road, every guy there should be thinking about that they're going to win this race. Otherwise, they really shouldn't be out there, because that is the focus. That is the reason you're there. So it is all about the competition. I mean, I saw the other. It was great that Mark Martin won the Nextel All-Star race.
Yeah.
But the $1 million means very little to Mark over the win. And they hype it with the money and all that, but really you could take the money away and the people could leave the grandstands and we still race just as hard, because that's the way we grew up with, racing for $100 and to win, and we had to split that with the owner and
and off you go.
And off you go, and you get this plastic trophy, but the trophy meant something of representing an accomplishment. That's what it was all about.
Mr. Andretti, we're very grateful to you for being with us tonight. Thanks so much for taking us into that car.
My pleasure.
John Andretti, NASCAR driver, nephew of racing legend Mario Andretti, one of the guys who does it. We're talking tonight with Jeff McGregor, author of the new book Sunday Money, Speed, Lust, Madness, Death, A Hot Lap Around America with NASCAR. You can join the conversation, 1-800-423-8255. Penny's calling from Windale, North Carolina. Hi, Penny, you're on the air. What do you think?
Well, basically, I was listening to the beginning of the show, and I felt like there wasn't enough emotion put into it. NASCAR racing is an emotional bond. When you're watching it, there's a lot of things going on. The strategy is intense, and you can put everything you've got into it, set your car, make your car, do all the adjustments, everything that you need, get a great driver and put them out there, and they can plan every pit stop. Everything could be perfect. And you think, oh, I've got a win here, and everything is totally unpredictable. It's a it's a chess game gone mad.
Penny, do you feel that emotion as a fan or as a participant?
As a fan, I mean, I just when I watch it, I'm looking at strategy, and because I even with games or just any daily kind of thing, it's strategy. What are you going to do next? It's you know, trying to get to the end, and you've outsmarted everybody else, and then all of a sudden something can go wrong, and it's totally out of your control.
And who are you rooting for this Sunday at the Coca-Cola 600? Who's your driver, Penny? Who's your car?
Well,
what's your car?
Actually, I have two.
Okay.
Unlike my mother, who picked Jeff Gordon because she liked his car color.
Not because he's so good-looking, they say.
No, it was the car color for
okay.
my mom.
Okay.
For me, I have two drivers. I have the good and the sometimes bad and sometimes unjustly called bad. For me, I always pulled for Terry Labonte because he was always the good guy, the guy with integrity, who drove with class. And then I had to have the wild side, and so I pulled for Tony Stewart.
Okay.
And so I have to have the good and the sometimes very aggressive individual who I still pull for. And I'll scream at the TV when the announcer or somebody says something that, you know, I'm looking at the playbacks and they're blaming him for something that he didn't do, or, you know, I just I get upset. It's a very emotional thing.
Penny, we've got it. You're taking us right in there, and it's just terrific. We wish you the greatest emotional high in watching the race on Sunday, and thanks a lot for being with us. Jeff McGregor, is that the voice? Is that the classic American NASCAR
fan?
Sure
is. No, you can't. I just think, having heard from Penny and John, you've heard the two, I think, classic representations of the sport. If you hear how calm John is,
yeah,
talking about running 200 miles an hour, bumper to bumper, door handle to door handle, and you hear Penny getting worked up just talking about what's going to happen a couple days from now.
Don't forget the emotion.
People,
right.
She's incredibly excited. And that's what I found to be true with core NASCAR fans, really hardcore lovers of this sport. And I have to make this clear, and maybe I wasn't emotional enough at the beginning, and I give Petty credit for bringing that up. NASCAR fans are more ardent, are more passionate, are more involved with their sport than any other professional sports fans. And I've seen plenty of them in plenty of sports. And the level of ardor and devotion and commitment is unlike anything I've ever seen before. I think Penny's a good example of that. Although she's having a sort of a schizophrenic thing there with Terry Labonte and Tony Stewart. That's a little bit of an alpha and omega thing there.
Well, you mean the good guy, the wild guy?
Well, she's rooting for the white hat and the black hat. So well, she's got her
Tony Stewart. Tony Stewart's your black hat guy there.
Well, he is now, and I think that he's... Some of that has been done consciously to market him as a brand, because that's the other thing you have to say about these drivers. They are all the bearers of their corporate sponsor's message out into America.
But Tony Stewart, you describe him with the thick trunk of a young Telly Savalas, a sex symbol, and wildly popular with that.
And that's where the custard pie is coming from tomorrow night at the reading, I'm sure. You know, Tony is a very mercurial guy who's got about 9 personalities, 3 of which are charming and affable and fun to be around. The other 6 of which sort of tip the horizon into something you're not sure you want to see.
And clearly, from Penny we're hearing tonight, she knows her racers. She knows each of those personalities. There's a cast of characters here that the whole NASCAR nation
exactly
knows, loves, hates, you name it. Jeff McGregor, author of Sunday Money. Stick with us. We've got to take a short break here. We're talking tonight about the United States of NASCAR. You can join the conversation. What about the sponsorship side of this, the sponsorship tsunami? Would you buy a toothpaste because Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s face is on it? What about a Budweiser? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Is going to be for second on back. It's Tony Stewart. Rear view mirror filled with Ryan Newman. Another car length back to Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the United States of NASCAR, the supercharged corporate and cultural phenom of stock car racing in the USA. My guest tonight, John McGregor, out with the new book, Sunday Money, Speed, Lust, Madness, Death, A Hot Lap Around America with NASCAR. You can join the conversation tonight. What does NASCAR stand for in America today? How do you interpret it? What's at the heart of the NASCAR nation? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Carrie's calling from Concord, New Hampshire. Hi, Carrie. You're on the air.
Hello. How are you?
We're great. What do you think, Carrie? What do you think of NASCAR?
Well, I live about 6 miles away from a NASCAR track, and I've always been puzzled by the appeal, the massive appeal of NASCAR, but having given it a lot of thought, I have a couple theories about
okay,
why
it's
so popular.
Okay, let's hear it. Yeah.
Well, number one, I think it has to do with, you know, America's abiding love for the automobile. And I think it's something that, in particular, appeals to rural America in a very unique way. I think that people in rural areas can really identify with the sport and with the drivers, driving fast and driving fast cars and racing is something that many of us in rural areas grew up on.
So you've got the rural piece, mm-hmm. and you've got the love of cars never to be underestimated. Put those two together, and do you see the fastest-growing sport on the planet? Does it add up to you, Carrie?
At least it does here in the United States.
You got it. We got it. Carrie, thanks very much. Jeff McGregor, how about it? Take us away. I mean, the track is always there, but when you step back from it and look down on it, how do you interpret the sort of larger penumbra around NASCAR here? There's something of the South, you write. What's the secret sauce? What's the cultural, you know, vibe?
Well, I think it grew up in the South, and it also, I mean, not to discount Northern racing, believe me, there was plenty of racing going on in Vermont and New Hampshire at the same time that NASCAR was getting started. America loves cars. I mean, that is clear, and we love to drive them too fast. Part of us also loves to see them destroyed. I mean, let's face it. If you live in a city without a mass transportation system, you have a love-hate relationship with your car. You love the fact that it can get you around, but you also hate the thing because it requires so much money and time and maintenance. Mm. And one of the things that people love about NASCAR is the fact that you can absolutely detonate one of these cars, see it back on the track the next week. Now, presuming that no one gets hurt, I don't believe that NASCAR fans or any racing fans of any stripe anywhere in the world actually want to see someone seriously hurt. I don't view it as a blood sport in the way that some writers have in the past. I think that's too facile. I think, though, that there is some love of risk in our species that you cannot get beyond. And this is a sport that wears its risk right out on its sleeve. Football, not so much. Hockey, not so much. Of course, there's physical risk in those sports. But every time these guys get in the car, there is a palpable sense that somebody could die.
But when the politicians all came out in the last big election season, and suddenly everybody wanted to be seen at the NASCAR track, everybody wanted to be the pal of the NASCAR dads, then they're cozying up to something that's not just an experience of racing, not just an attitude about cars. It's a bigger attitude. It's a cultural attitude. It's a politically profilable subset of the American population. What is that subset?
Well, I think, you know, what the politicians were trying to co-opt this last time around with that NASCAR dad shorthand was the disenchanted middle the nearly disenfranchised middle, which is, in their view, and I'm not saying this is how I feel about it, but I think they took the view that these were blue-collar white guys in the demographic from, say, 28 to 45, who felt like their voices were not being heard. Now, you know that NASCAR Dad doesn't represent one political party or another.
Is that true?
They never claimed. Well, I don't think it is true. I think it's disingenuous to say that they were up for grabs. If you ask Richard Petty while you're sitting on the workbench at Martinsville to point out a Democrat, he's going to have a hell of a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
It is a conservative political community in the main. That said, of course, they're Democrat fans. They're liberal fans. But in the main, it reflects the same shift in Southern politics that has taken the last 30 years to occur since the Nixon administration, where you had the middle class Democrats who were sort of voting along union lines in the mid 60s have now become Republicans because they're voting along family values lines.
And they're at the track, and as you say, they are, sure, among other things, blindingly white.
Yeah, it's an incredibly white sport, and NASCAR has, you know, paid lip service to diversity for the last 10 years, and finally seems to have engaged some sort of program over the last 3 or 4 years to bring more minorities into the sport.
But is it somehow at its cultural heart a kind of a race convention?
I'm not sure. I don't think I want to say that. These are some of the most generous, welcoming, nicest people I've ever met. And I spent a lot of time with them. That was the other reason to do it in a motorhome, was to sort of rub up against these folks and not try to pigeonhole them in the way that a sociologist or an anthropologist would.
I love the way you quoted one fan here talking about Dale Earnhardt, of course, senior, the great of greats, the much bemoaned. You asked him why he was so enamored of Dale Earnhardt, and he responded to you, "He drove the way I feel." I don't know if I know exactly what he means by that, but it kind of gives me a shiver. I want to get some more callers here. Nate's calling from Amesbury, Massachusetts. Hi, Nate. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi. What do you think? NASCAR.
Well, I'm a former fan, and I was hoping that Mr. McGregor would talk a little bit about the dirty side of NASCAR, or the side that a lot of fans don't like to hear about.
What's the dirty side?
Well, I myself have some concerns about their business motives, the way they conduct their business. I've often heard them speak about loyalty, and they'll wrap themselves in that cloak, and then they can be amazingly disloyal when it comes to the bottom line. And really, that's the crux of why I have a problem with NASCAR, which is at some point within the last decade or decade and a half, it ceased to be about sport, from my point of view, and started to be about business.
Nate, let us go straight to that. Jeff McGregor, what do you say? You make no bones about it. You say, look, this is a business, but you write eloquently about that kind of transition that Nate's feeling there. How do you describe it?
Well, Nate is one of the folks I'm kind of sticking up for in the book, the hardcore fan in the chicken bone seats. These are the folks who sat out on the tailgate of their station wagon for 40 years in the sun, eating an egg salad sandwich, watching NASCAR before anybody cared about NASCAR. What's happened, though, as Nate well knows, is there's so much money moving through the sport. There's so much corporate money. You know, just to clue the listeners in, a single primary sponsorship for a single car runs about $15 million. So if you see a car on the track with a logo on the hood, that car owner is being paid $15 million for the privilege of doing so. Mm. We're talking about many billions of dollars moving through this sport. NASCAR is a business owned by a single family, run by a single family. It's not a public company. And they have every right to grow the sport as they see fit. And that's what they're doing. The problem is that in order to mainstream the sport, in order to make it like the NFL or the NBA or Major League Baseball.
And that's the goal?
Well, of course it is. I mean, is that not the goal of the guy who starts a store in a corner storefront? You know, why should NASCAR be any different than General Motors? I mean, the line I use in the book is this. where the core fans are being hurt is that for years they thought of stock car racing as a culture. And yes, Southern stock car racing is a culture.
The sweetest NASCAR, secret that the old New South ever kept from the North, you write.
Exactly. But what NASCAR is a business that sells stock car racing. And they're fantastically successful at it. But they have to abandon parts of their past in order to move into this sort of zipless, seamless, very profitable mainstream future they imagine for themselves. You cannot risk giving offense to the good folks at General Foods or General Mills or Budweiser by letting a bunch of brawling stock car drivers run the cars they used the way they do 30 years ago. Now what it is, it's this fairly polite bunch of well-schooled spokespeople driving these cars. They're still tremendous drivers, but they all feel the yoke of Nanny NASCAR. You know, it's a common thing out here for drivers to be fined for misspeaking on live television.
Mm.
One of the sport's big heroes, Dale Earnhardt Jr., was fined and had points taken away not long ago for having uttered a four-letter word in the heat of a live interview on television.
This a long way from what you described there as the roaring, delinquent passion at the far margin of polite society, the promise of pure gearhead transcendence for the lucky outlaw few. We're talking scripted and fined for a misstep.
Exactly. And that's all part of building the franchise. And they have every right to do what NASCAR does. But it's interesting. They refer to Nate as their historical problem. Their historical problem is letting gently go of the hardcore fan while they cozy up to that, you know, Dockers wearing maximum dad in suburban anywhere USA who doesn't like things so rough around the edges.
Well, who knows who likes what? Steve's calling from Westchester, New York. Steve, is that you? Dockers wearing, don't want it so rough around the edges? Are you a NASCAR guy?
I am absolutely a NASCAR guy. I work in Manhattan. I'm an executive, a six-figure income in a large corporation. I've got a number of fans that are demographically similar to me who will not miss a race. I'll attend four races this year. Had the pleasure of meeting Richard Petty this past February at Daytona. I drove a car for 30 laps in the Petty Experience, as you did, and found it to be the most incredibly physical and challenging event that could be. But it was very interesting because on Sunday's New York Times book review, I read the review of your book and said, this guy just doesn't get it.
You thought Jeff McGregor doesn't get it.
Just doesn't get it.
Why not? I mean, boy, he gets awfully deep into it there. What do you think's missing?
And then I read the review in today's Times,
and
now I'm hearing you on the radio. You do get it. But the point is, Penny gets it. Penny was right on the money.
Oh, sure.
Okay, we're passionate about it. We identify on multiple levels, whether it's team, whether it's brand, whether it's sponsor. I won't drink Coors beer.
Because?
Because I can't go for Sterling Marlin.
Okay. They don't have your car.
They don't have my car. Right. And I'll root for Jack Roush regardless of what brand he's involved with.
And is it all about the race, Steve, or when you roll up your sleeves at the track, is it also, Mr. New York Executive, about, I don't know, belling up to the bar with the good old boys? Is that a piece of it or not?
No, absolutely not. It's about, you know, we say it's about the racing. It's about the racing. John Andretti made an interesting point, and he said as the track changes, okay, and you guys didn't say, what do you mean as the track changes? Someone who doesn't know NASCAR thinks you meant one of the 36 venues.
But you mean the track itself as you race on it?
The track itself as they race this Sunday afternoon, this coming Sunday evening, okay, that track will change many, many times. And it's about the technology that these guys are reading the track. They know what they have to do. They know what they have to do to change the car. These aren't the bootleggers. These are the finest technology. Who made the comment earlier about making the old-style technology work in a high technology? I forget exactly how you guys phrased it tonight. But that's what it's about.
Wow.
It's about that eighth of an inch on a spoiler. It's about the tire wear. It's about what brakes do you use on what tracks.
Steve, we've got it, and we're really glad to have your call. Jeff McGregor, do you agree? Is that what it's about? I mean, you know, Tom Wolfe wrote about stock car racing decades ago for Esquire. You clearly got a taste of that, and there's a lot of that feeling in your book, and it's wonderful to read. Here's Steve. He's a true blue fan, and it's all about the race. And yet you describe so much more than the race here. So what is it all about?
Well, I think with all due respect to Steve, I want to say a couple of things. The first is that he proves a point that I try to make in the book, which is that there are NASCAR fans in every part of the country. And it's not you can make a case for it to be fairly narrow racially. But in terms of region or economy, I mean, the most ardent crazy fan we know probably worked not too far from him down on Wall Street, a woman in Manhattan who was just ardent about the sport. But it illustrates a point, and I'm not sure if Steve thought I didn't get it or the guy who reviewed my book didn't get it. There's a defensiveness on the part of NASCAR fans that you don't run into with fans in other sports. There's a presumption that if you presume to come in and write about the sport, you're not going to get it. That somewhere at the core of it, there's some kernel of mystery inaccessible to a journalist. And the thing I would say to Steve is, no, I don't go out like Penny because I don't think I want fans writing about the sport. I want journalists writing about the sport to get an honest look at what's happening inside it and report it as accurately or lyrically as they can. That said, I know what it means when the track changes. And the part of the appeal for certain people is that incredibly dynamic relationship between the engineers and the thing they're engineering. Now, other people, just as ardent as Steve, go to the track at Martinsville, couldn't care less about that. They don't care about the pit strategy. They don't want races won on gas mileage mathematics. They want to see somebody bang somebody else out of the way. And that's part of the richness of the sport. It is like chess, if you choose to make it so. Or it's like two guys going at each other with baseball bats. It allows people, and this is unique in sports. Football is football. Baseball is baseball. Choose your team. NASCAR can be a soap opera. It can be professional wrestling. It can be the highest human attainment in terms of engineering and driving skill. It can be what you choose for it to be.
Jeff McGregor, we've got half a minute left here. You spent a year up close and very personal with it, with your wife at your side. Do you go away a lifelong fan, or have you taken your turn through NASCAR and you're on to the next?
I have an immense respect for it. I really do, for all the reasons that all the callers talked about tonight. I think what I loved most about it was the perfect parade of the American character. Again, we met some of the roughest roughnecks you'd ever want to camp next to, and some of the most gracious, generous people in America. And I don't love the sport the way Penny does, but I love Penny for loving it the way she does.
And I love this line. You're on driver Kurt Busch. Picture a choir boy licking the blood from a bayonet. Jeff McGregor, you're right out there on the racing edge. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much, Tom. I appreciate it.
Jeff McGregor, his book is Sunday Money, Speed, Lust, Madness, Death, A Hot Lap Around America with NASCAR. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.